Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight we go back in time, the seasons past, when 22 men graced the rugged fields of yesterday, fighting for one more first down, one more yard gain, one final score which would bring victory after 60 minutes of battle on the gridiron. Tonight, we'll explore the world of gridiron greats. Welcome to Gridiron Greats Football Historic Memorabilia on the Gridiron Greats Publisher and Broadcasting Network, in conjunction with Swick Enterprises, and we're live from the Wallingford, Connecticut home of Gridiron Greats Magazine. I'm Bob Swick, publisher and editor of Gridiron Greats Magazine, and I'll be your host for the show. Gridiron Greats is the only publication in America which focuses upon the history and memorabilia of the North American football game since its inception in 1869, covering 150-plus years of football history and memorabilia. So find us on the web at gridirongreatsmagazine.com. It is at this time I'd like to introduce my co-host, the senior contributing writer to Gridiron Greats Magazine, a football memorabilia historian specializing in pre-World War II items, in particular Red Grange, and also Seattle Seahawk items, in particular Steve Largent. He hailed from Portland, Oregon, Mr. Joe Squires. Joe, welcome to the show this evening.
Always a pleasure, Captain. Always a pleasure. Yes. By the way, I forgot to mention pre-show. Got my Gridiron Greats magazine in the mail on Monday. Always a pleasure to see Swick Enterprises in the upper left corner of an envelope like that.
And our latest issue is available for sale, and people have been reading it, checking it out. And I'll start off immediately tonight by saying, if you're not a subscriber to Gridiron Greats Magazine, what are you waiting for?
What are you waiting for?
GridironGreatsMagazine.com. Joe, we're going to lead off tonight on a Super Bowl of improbable conceptualization by me.
Yep.
After the games we saw this past Sunday. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Sorry, Captain. Sorry, brother. It's, winning isn't the only thing. It's everything. From the man who the, you know, from the NFL champion, the trophy's named after they hoist. It's, you know, second place.
I'm just in shock at the play calling that I saw.
Oh.
Having one of the best quarterbacks in the National Football League on your side, and doing what you did, I'm just in a total state of shock by the whole thing. I'm not happy by what I've seen. I've seen a lot of stuff online too. Packer Nation is pretty upset with the team coaching. Obviously, you really got to question what's going on, and I do got to compliment Tom Brady, the ageless wonder, who's been in half the Super Bowls of his career. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. Can you believe that? I mean,
19 years of playing, excuse me, he's been in 10 Super Bowls. Their first Super Bowl win, obviously, you know, against the Rams in that classic, the classic gun show, 2002,
yep.
The Rams,
yep.
Unstoppable. just airing it out. You know, and it was appropriate for them to win that one. In 2002, it was after September 11th. Everybody was rooting for, you know, the Patriots. That seemed, you know, that seemed very appropriate. But, yeah, this guy just keeps popping up. He's, you know, on the one hand, I like dynasties. I've told you that before. But, this guy, we are witness to the greatest, not only player of our time, but probably the greatest player ever in the NFL. I don't know. 10 Super Bowl appearances. He's 5-4 in Super Bowls. He's the greatest.
And what's unheard of to me is, okay, I can see in a way what the Patriots were doing, trying to move on, but I don't think they really moved on to anything constructive this past season. I think it was just, you know, pretty much they could have gone with Brady one more year, and they probably would have won again because, again, he was able to adapt to, you know, a modified buck system that he, you know, he can excel in. And, you know, he hits pay dirt again.
There'll be a book. One of these days there'll be a tell-all book. Somebody will write it, and we'll know what went on behind closed doors. But we don't know who moved on. Was it Brady moving on, or was it, you know, Hoodie who wanted to move on? We'll never know. I mean, was it Brady wanting to get out from under the shadow of Hoodie? We don't know. To me, you put this tandem together, this, you know, Belichick and Brady. I mean, the greatest. I mean, it's hard for me to say things like the greatest ever and stuff around you. Lombardi, obviously, the greatest.
Yep.
But Belichick, I mean, think what he's done. I mean, and pretty obvious, having a star quarterback really, really helps.
Right.
I mean, we'll, one of these days, hopefully there'll be a book and we'll be able to hear somebody's side of the story about who moved on from who broke up with who. I mean, but harking back to the, you know, the days of the Packers, you know, with Brett Favre and who moved on from whom. I mean, you know, you had Aaron Rodgers riding the pine, you know, Green Bay decided to, you know, all right, it's Rodgers' time. And Brett, you know, Brett still had some gas in the tank, and he proved it.
Right.
And he proved it with two teams, taking the Jets to, I believe it was the AFC Championship game for the first time in I don't know how many years. And then with Minnesota, you know, your arch rival, you end up playing for them for whatever it was, a couple of seasons. And again, it was a situation where Favre still had it. He wanted to play. He wanted to prove to everybody he still had it. And I think a lot of these guys feel the same way. And, you know, again, you look at a quarterback, how many quarterbacks really spent their entire career with one team lately? Very few.
Yeah.
And Brady, of all people, I never would imagine not being in the Patriots uniform, just like I never anticipated Peyton Manning not being in a Colts uniform and ends up with the Broncos, you know, that type of situation.
Obviously I call Brett Favre, you know, Brett Favre from that movie, you know, Something About Mary. It's kind of a nod to modern culture, but, you know, Favre, I think he has he's the only quarterback in NFL history to have beat every single team in the NFL, which is kind of a funny stat when you think of it.
exactly.
You know, including his old team, Packers, play calling. Yeah. And it reminded me of that Super Bowl, you know, the Seahawks lost, to the Patriots back in 2015, bad play calling. Why are, you know, you've got one of the greatest running backs. You've got, why are you throwing the ball? Why are you throwing the ball? I mean, and you just shake your head at bad play calling. And you know, when they were interviewing David Butler, the safety who picked that ball off, he was like, "We practiced that in practice. I mean, you know, we had word that the Seahawks loved that inside slant, and we knew how they lined up, and you know, we knew, you know, what it looked like, and I knew where to go. We practiced it in practice a lot."
Right.
And you take beast mode off the field. He's not even there as a decoy. He's not even playing Terrell Davis, you know, with the Broncos as a decoy, you know, when he was blinded by migraines, you know, in the Super Bowl. You know, beast mode's off the field, and you try that inside slant. And as a Seahawks fan, I'm shaking my head. What the hell? You know, you've got time on the board. and you're down first and goal, you know, just ram it through, you know, make it happen. And same thing with play calling. There were a couple of I call them career, you know, decisions by like Aaron Rodgers. He probably could have ran that in for a touchdown, but he chose to, you know, pull up a little bit. That's a career decision right there. You know,
if I was coaching in that situation, I would just told Rodgers, do whatever you got to do, get the ball over and get the 2 points. It's on you. That's it. And he probably would have easily done it. But again,
yeah.
I see a lot of metrics involved, a lot of probability, blah, blah, blah. And you know what? In a game that important, you shouldn't be wasting time on that. That's the way I look at it, being old school. So that's it.
Yeah. And it's tough. You know, we were talking offline about, the fail safe for a coach to say is you get down there, you put points on the board. I think a lot of fans are like, okay, well, it's a 2-score game, 4 minutes, 5 minutes left, 3 timeouts. At some point, you got to punch it in. You got Tom Brady on the other side.
Right.
We're down here close. You punch it in.
Right.
I don't think there's many fans who would, you know, who would be pissed if, you know, the Pack try to push that in on fourth down. They try to go for it. Unless it's a horrible play call. Unless it's line up in an I formation, you know, telegraph what you're doing and try and ram it down their throat. I mean, you'll get creative. You've got half a dozen plays in your trick bag, you know, option, you know, tight formation, you know, peel the tight end out, you know, whatever it is, you've got plays there. I don't think there's fans who would second guess a coach who rolls the dice and bets on the ability of their professional players when they get down there in that position versus the career decision, which is to put points on the board. You can't question, well, we put points on the board. That's the fail safe. That's the safe play. Well, sometimes you got to roll the dice, you know.
Exactly.
Especially when Tom Brady was on the side. So, I don't know. It's disappointing to see the Pack lose, you know, just because you're a dear friend and, you know, I'm a Packer fan. They're a legacy there. You know? They're the Packers. They're the Green Bay Packers. You know, who doesn't love the Green Bay Packers? You're not an NFL fan if you don't. It's history. It's just like I'm a closeted Chicago Bears fan. How am I not a Bears fan? You know, they're NFL history in the making.
Yep.
It's easy for me not to like the Dallas Cowboys, obviously, because, you know. No, I'm just kidding. That was for Steve. But it's, I don't know. It's tough. I feel bad. You know, it's, I remember a couple years ago telling you a story about how I was in a store and a guy was wearing a, you know, 2005, you know, Seattle Seahawks jacket and said, you know, 2005 NFC champs. You know, we lost that Super Bowl to the Steelers. It was like, dude, you don't wear an NFC champ jacket. You know, second place, nobody cares about, you know, nobody remembers who the NFC champ was. You know, nobody remembers who came in second in the Masters, you know.
Exactly.
You know, don't celebrate second place, you know. It's impressive. You know, you're the best in the NFC, but it's not the best. It's, I don't know.
Exactly.
It kind of reminds me, you know, it's tough.
Exactly.
I'm sorry.
All right. Our special guest is here, and we're going to move on. Our special guest this evening has one of the largest collections of over 1,400 custom football McFarland statues, with 90% of them being Hall of Famers. Our guest hails from Canada. I'd like to welcome to the show this evening Mr. John Sanchez. John, welcome to the show this evening.
Hi, guys.
How are you, John?
Pleasure to be on. Good afternoon,
John. Welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, my pleasure. It's I'm very passionate about this collection, and I think it very well embodies the message that your magazine is trying to put out, honoring the great players of the past. So it's my pleasure to be on.
John, judging by the PDF booklet you sent me, you are, you know, passionate about this is an understatement, my friend.
Thank you.
You are the expert, and I'm going to lead off right now by asking you, How'd you get started collecting these amazing pieces of statues and just great?
It was a long journey. Even though I currently live in Canada, I grew up in South Florida. I grew up in Miami in the 1960s, and during that period, I developed a very strong love for the game of football. I had an uncle who went to the University of Miami, and he would take us to the games. It was during the George Mira age, if you remember who he was. They had played for the San Francisco 49ers. And I also would watch the NFL games on CBS, mostly Washington Redskins, and you'd see, you know, the Bobby Mitchells and the Sonny Jurgensen's play when they played the Packers, Bart Starr, Paul Hornung. So I began to have a love for the great players of the past. As time went on, actually, in 1969, I had my brother. I have a twin brother who's also a collector. We got free tickets to go to the Super Bowl. So we were in the Miami Orange Bowl in 1969 when Namath defeated the Colts under Shula. And of course,
wow.
In 1967, when the Dolphins came to town, I became a huge Miami Dolphins fan and got season tickets and. So it was a combination of those factors that led me to want to do something in football. But unfortunately or unfortunately, I think it's fortunately, I met a young lady and we fell in love. And 7 kids later, it was tough to come up with the money to, you had to pay for the tuitions in college, 7 of them, plus graduate school and 2 weddings. I had 2 daughters as well. And so my journey for collection really was delayed until 2002. So it took me a while. I was in my early 50s when my wife said, yep, it's time. You can create your man cave. And I remember receiving the first McFarlane, which was a Ricky Williams McFarlane.
That Ricky Williams one looks good.
Yeah, it was one of Todd McFarlane's first figurines from his series, and but most of his figures were stars of the day. Even though some of them ended up becoming Hall of Famers, like the first Warren Sapp was the first figurine ever created by Todd McFarlane, and he's in the Hall of Fame. And the second one was Kurt Warner. So at least his first two were in the Hall of Fame. But most of them were not Hall of Famers. And as a result of that, I started to see on eBay the production of custom McFarlanes. And these would be artists that would take a standard McFarlane figurine. These are 6-inch figurines, and they would customize them to reflect the new player. And a number of them were Hall of Famers. So I started to buy up, and for a 5-year period, I probably was the leading buyer of custom McFarlanes on eBay. But most of them didn't know the old players. You know, they didn't know a Joe Gunyan or a Fats Henry. So in order to complete my collection, I actually began to commission some of these Hall of Famers to create the ones that nobody ever knew about. And that was a lot of fun because, in fact, this is where your magazine came and was very helpful because I was able to research. I would provide the artists, because they didn't know, most of them were young guys, with the information of the uniforms, their style, their poses. So your magazine was very helpful in that process. And by, I would say, 2015, I had collected every Hall of Fame class from 1963 to 2015, and in fact, in many cases, had multiple individuals within that, and began to expand that collection into dioramas where I would take multiple Hall of Famers and put them into one setting.
Huh.
So that pretty much led me to where we're at today.
Wow.
Unbelievable. You know, it's interesting. to share with our audience. You sent us a presentation, the book that you had, and I tell you, I thought I knew a little bit about McFarland's, but I really did not comprehend. I didn't really understand how deep it is until I read your book there, as far as all the different artists and all the different timelines for the different types of production of, Savino, so on and so forth in the statue market. I had no idea about that. It was pretty amazing to read and to look at the same time. So that's an amazing part of your collection also. So
I think a lot of your collectors would know the collecting market for figurines started in the 1960s with Heartland creating figurines,
right.
And then in the 80s, the starting lineup came out. But both of those weren't very detailed. What Todd McFarlane was able to do was to make these look very, very realistic. And then the artists that customized the McFarlane make them even more realistic, especially reflecting the older players, because you don't want to have Jim Thorpe with the face of Tom Brady, right? So they had to somehow find parts that would make the old-timers in this collection look old-timers rather than young.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Like you mentioned, the SLUs, you know, I used to collect a couple of those, the starting lineups. You know, they were a lot shorter than these. Did you say you have 7 kids?
I have 7 kids and 19 grandchildren.
Oh,
so that's why we can't leave Canada, because as much as my family's still in South Florida, and I go down every so often for Dolphin games, but not obviously not with COVID now, but I can't leave my 19 grandkids that are in Canada. But all of them are Dolphin fans, so that's good.
Nice. Well, John, with 7 kids.
Yeah.
7 kids. It's nice to see you have a hobby outside of the McFarlanes. Bob mentioned, you know, the book that you sent us, the 30-page book, and I looked at that quite a few times after you emailed it to me. First of all, it was 300 meg. I think it took like 3 minutes for me to download it, so thank you for sending in that, you know, on that Dropbox. But just incredible. How did these get made? I mean, you know, it's on page 4 of this booklet. You've got them rolled out on a piece of paper, and it looks like you kind of piece them together based on, you know, what it looks like.
Right. Well, what happens, Bob and Joe, is that the artist first of all, I would submit to the artist a picture of the player and the description with colors of the uniform and so forth, and then they would get a standard McFarlane that you could pick up at Toys R Us for $10, let's say, and they would essentially strip that McFarlane, disassemble it, and repaint it based on the color scheme and information that I would provide them. And it's a long process. Normally, it would take an artist probably, you know, 3 or 4 days to complete the reconfiguration of a standard McFarlane. And I suspect the McFarlane company probably likes this because people are still buying McFarlanes to be able to make these customs. And because it's a work of art, it's not considered any infringement on any rights either from the NFL or the McFarlane itself.
Oh, I hadn't even thought about that as, you know, like infringement like that. Huh.
I always wondered about that, and that makes sense now as far as being able to do it. So that's definitely enlightening to know that. So I can see why they've been able to do it for such a long time. That's pretty neat, to say the least.
Yeah. So you're not piecing these together. You're still.
No,
you're still
I'm not the artist. I commissioned the artist to, as I said, that's where your magazine would come in, along with some other reference books. I would, you know, I would look up what Fat Henry's uniform looked like, what his facial features were, what his body shape was and provide all that to the artist, they would then find the standard McFarlane that best resembles that, or they may take a couple of them and disassemble them, strip them of the paint, and then repaint them to reflect the player that I wanted. Otherwise, I would never, McFarlane would never have produced a Guy Chamberlain, for instance. Like, they would never have happened.
Well, yeah, I mean, that definitely makes sense to them. So I'm wondering why they never decided to go with older players. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah. Oh, sure. First of all, this McFarlane Toy Company is huge. They make action figures for, like, the Walking Dead series. So they're limited in terms of – so every year they would produce now maybe 7 or 8 players. They did finally, I think a couple of years later, produce a Legend series. So there are some, like a Bart Starr or a Dick Butkus. But none of the old players, not a Jim Thorpe, not a Red Grange, you know, none of those players that we all fell in love with. So, you know, a Bill Hewitt without his helmet on, you know, that would not have fallen. Like, the market for that would have been very limited. They were going after the kids that, you know, see a Tom Brady. And so I think Tom Brady's been on there 3 or 4 times already in terms of the McFarlane. But so my collection is different from that end.
These are fascinating, Bob. I went on the McFarlane website, you know, a couple of days ago. I mean, they've got Walking Dead, Game of Thrones, you know, Marvel Comics, DC Universe. I mean, Flash. I mean, it's fascinating. You know, just, you know, they've got. I mean, I don't even think they have a section on their website for NFL anymore, do they?
They do, but it's again limited. Like I said, maybe 4 or 5 players a year, and usually it's the hot players of that year.
Right.
You know, Mariota, they had a Manziel when he first came into the league. You know, they would try to anticipate, you know, who's going to be hot, but they really didn't do justice from the old-timers, you know, Sammy Baugh or Ollie Mattson or Elroy Hirsch. You know, they would just never do that. I had to find the artists that were capable and that's how the collection expanded, because otherwise I would have been very limited. There's no way I could have ever completed all the Hall of Famers.
So how are you able to get McFarlane to customize these for you? I mean, can anyone do that? Can anyone order these or ask for customization?
Yeah, all you need to do, guys, and I know you do this, just go on eBay and Google or type in custom McFarlane. Like I did that yesterday, there are 300 custom McFarlane's on eBay as we speak. So anybody can buy them. They vary in price from $50 to $400. But again, you would be hard pressed to find an old time Hall of Famer. You may find the occasional Paul Warfield, Nick Bonacani, but if you go back to the, you know, starting class, then you're not going to find those. So Leo Nominelli, those are not going to be. Those you would have to commission with the artist and say, this is the player I want. This is the stats. This is information that you need to be able to put it together. And then I got comfortable with 3 or 4. I may have bought from 20, but there were 3 or 4 that were really, you know, there's one guy that every one of his pieces is almost like a museum piece.
John, I know you're for real. You pronounced Nick Bonacani's last name correctly. Well done.
There you go. One of my favorite Dolphins of all time. And
John, how do you actually display and store these pieces? I could tell by seeing, you know, what you presented to us, but can you describe to our audience how you actually do that?
Sure. I'm sure this is the biggest challenge that all collectors have, but especially with over 1,000 pieces. I ended up renovating my basement with 3 large ceiling to wall bookcases I bought 10 of the IKEA display cases, and they have like a locker room style small cabinet,
right.
And use that.
Yeah.
And the one that I had the most fun with was I found a manufacturer out of Michigan who would create a plexiglass shadow box, and then I provided them with the Hall of Fame name and team and stats, and he would etch them in the front of the plexiglass. So every inch of wall that wasn't covered by the bookcases, I had this shadow box with the player inside. Secondly, because I knew who these players were. I mean, I could walk around my museum and know exactly who the player
yeah.
was. Anybody that would visit the house would have no clue. So I had to come
yeah.
up with a scheme to identify who the players were. And I started initially using some of my cards that I had collected over the years. But, you know, not every Hall of Famer has a card. So I actually began, and these I did myself, I began customizing Hall of Fame cards using old style, like the Mayo style or the Bowman style. So
yeah.
each Hall of Famer has his own custom card. And then you may or may not know that back in the early days with the Hall of Fame, every player got a statue, but they also got a enshrinement mural. In fact, I was listening to one of your podcasts where I think he was the Cleveland Browns collector with Jim Brown,
yep.
and he had got his enshrinement mural. So I was able to secure over a period of time copies of every mural, and I used that in the background of the player. So whoever visits my museum would then see the player's name and a picture of the mural in the background of the player. So that was kind of cool.
Interesting. That's pretty cool because I noticed you had the same kind of background scene in the booklet. You had a lot of, you know, the same background scene with
that's not the background in the booklet. Was I had a catalog every player, so I used the same background, but that's not the background that the player is displayed at. That's just for my cataloging purposes. As you can imagine, you could lose this pretty quickly if I didn't know. You know, where they were and so forth. So I used the same background to catalog the players, but then I would take them from that and put them in their own case with their Hall of Fame mural as their background.
How interesting. Yeah, I noticed that. I began to notice a pattern with a referee, you know, kind of crouching down.
That's just a common. That was just a background that I found to use just to – but they're not displayed that way. They're displayed in with their Hall of Fame mural in the background.
Yeah. Our next question is, you know, what are your top six? But I kind of made a note on what my favorite ones were, and I wanted to run them over with you and get your input, what you thought.
Sure.
The Johnny Unitas one with his arm cocked back looks so good. That one is just spot on. That's Unitas. That's his throwing style. That was really well done.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was an artist out of actually your area. And
nice.
Joe Gunning is his name. And he if you remember in my information to you, I rated the the artist, and he was the one that was most creative. And I like his work because he would put them in styles that you wouldn't see. If you took a standard McFarlane receiver or quarterback, they wouldn't have that style. And he was able to embed, create that made him look very realistic.
Yeah, and I'll share some of these with our listeners later on our vintage, you know, football card website. You know, there's one of Todd Tobias will love of Lance Allworth catching a ball and, you know, cradling in what I assume is a touchdown pass because Lance Allworth was really good at catching touchdown passes. That one looked very good as well. I really like that one.
Yeah, very good.
The Red Grange one looks good. He looks a little thicker than normal, but it's still, I love the colors that got picked. The classic, you know, 77 looked awesome. My second favorite, Dwight Clark, the catch, that looks so good. I mean, and it was so well done. and just him jumping up with, it's not named in it, but, you know, Everson Walls standing there watching, you know, him, you know, just a lesson in futility as Dwight Clark jumps, you know, 10 feet up and catches a ball that was, you know, intended to go out of bounds. Just that one looks really good. I like that one. And then obviously I'm sure you would agree, you know, and you probably get a lot of requests to buy this one, like the Steve Largent one, you know, where he's diving to the right.
Catching again. I thought Joe would like that. Yeah. I thought Joe would
catching
like
again,
that.
Again, what I assume is a record breaking 100th touchdown pass, breaking Don Hudson's record. You know, white home uniform, just really, really well done. That's probably my favorite. I'm sure everybody who would peruse through that catalog would agree. It's probably the best looking one. That's it. It's really impressive. Those ones caught my eye, but you know, being candid, that was Dwight Clark. Dwight Clark to catch one is probably my favorite.
You know, your question, Bob, is like asking me, you know, who's my favorite child out of seven. Like, I have picked six, but it's very difficult. And all the ones that you mentioned, I could have easily put into my top 10. These were very well done and reflected. I have a few other Red Granges that body size were probably a little bit more symmetric to what he looked like. But, you know, sometimes these are artists, right? So they take liberty sometimes in terms of how they create them.
Right. Yeah. Let's kick it to you then, John. What are your favorites?
Yeah. Well, as I began the collection, you know, most of the McFarlands were individual players and they would be in a stance. It came to me later on that wouldn't it be cool to have McFarlands and these great players in combination of each other, kind of in a diorama type of approach. So my absolutely favorite is one that I commissioned from a painting done by Richard Marks, who's a well-known sports artist, called Doped and the Boys, and it's showing the four Hall of Famers from Detroit, Bobby Lane, Lou Creekmore, Dick Stanfield, and Dope Walker sitting on a bench during the 1952 championship game. And the detail on this is unbelievable. It's like you're almost there. You can see the chill in the air. They're wearing their winter coats. It's an amazing piece, and probably my favorite of the dioramas.
Bobby Lane sitting on the end of the bench, the blonde bomber, hair just looks good.
Yeah. If you just look up Doped and the Boys and Richard Marks, you would see the painting that inspired that piece.
Mm-hmm.
The second one was a similar type of, there's the photo of three great Packers, and I call it Hudson and the Boys, and that's Don Hudson, Clark Hinkle, and Tony Cannata sitting on a bench. There's a fire going on. It's a very nice piece, and certainly if you're a Packer fan, I'm sure they would love to have that for sure. The third is actually very similar. In the 1948 NFL Championship game, which should have been called off because of a blizzard, I entitled this the Philly Blizzard, and it shows two Hall of Famers, Pete Fios and Steve Van Buren, along with somebody who should be in the Hall of Fame, Bucko Kilroy, an old-timer, but all of them were named to the NFL All-Decade Team of the 1940s. And that piece I like a lot because it has actual snow on the ground. Not the actual snow, but depiction of snow on the ground. So that was a cool piece as well. Of course, being a huge Dolphin fan, I could not include one of my Dolphin pieces in here. And in tribute to Bob Greasy and Larry Zonka, there's The Perfect Season, which shows them handing off to Larry Zonka during the 1972 Perfect Season.
Yeah. I like the 72 stand in the background, just, you know, how you got the 72 in there, just to note it.
Right. And then I also got into collecting, after I had finished the collection in 2015, I decided to keep the collection going by finding the Hall of Famers in their college uniforms. So the fifth one again inspired by a painting by another sports artist by the name of Arnold Freiberg, and it's called The Passing Game. And this is probably my favorite individual McFarlane, and it shows Don Hutson in his Alabama Crimson Tide uniform receiving a pass in his, you know, style that you see in a lot of photos, and the ball is suspended over his head. I could see this piece sitting in the Hall of Fame for sure.
Yeah, I agree.
And
with that.
The number six, one of my favorite quarterbacks of all time from the Giants, Wyatt Tittle, in a famous game in 1964. This comes from another photograph. He had just
iconic
thrown a pick six, had been whacked in the head, and he's sitting in the Pittsburgh Steelers end zone with blood dripping out of his head. I mean, you talk
iconic
about the Gridiron Warrior. It's a classic photo. You see it in a lot of magazines, but it's one of my favorite hit pieces, so to speak. Wyatt Tittle in the end zone.
Yeah, I love that photo. That to me is toughness. Whenever people are like, you know, could a modern day quarterback, you know, put up numbers like they do, you know, back in that era, you know, of YA, I point to that photo and I say, no way. You know.
Those
are my top six.
You know, a photo that can't be forgotten and a piece, that, you know, to have a custom piece like that is just incredible. Truly incredible. Amazing.
So quick question there, Don. Like the Tony Gonzalez dunking, you know, the picture that you have of it shows him behind the goalpost. You know, how is he suspended in air? Is he attached to the goalpost, or is that, you know, there a post?
He's actually hanging. He's a good question. He's actually hanging. The artist created it so that he's hanging from the goalpost. So it's a very cool piece. I got it actually before he became a Hall of Famer. So that's one of the fun things of the collecting. I would collect McFarlane customs that I thought should be in the Hall of Fame. And this one was one of the ones that I collected early before he went into the Hall of Fame. But I was pretty confident that he would make it.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
There was some that I have took a longer time, but this one I knew was going to, no question, be it. But I have an Alex Karras that I had before he was in put into the Hall of Fame. There have been a few that I bought in advance with the hope that they would get into the Hall.
Well done. Yeah. That one looks cool.
John,
I like it.
John, do you have any collecting stories you'd like to share with our audience that would interest us?
Well, maybe a couple. There's one that in the package that I sent you, I rated the number of Hall of Famers that I had by individual, and you may have seen that the number one player that I had was Ted Hendricks. And, of course, he played for three NFL teams as well as the University of Miami, so it was easy to come up with a 16. But what's interesting about that is that I actually went to high school with Ted Hendricks in Florida. He was 2 years ahead of me. I never met him, but I could see him walking the halls because back then he was still 6'7". So it was kind of cool that I would ultimately collect somebody that you go to high school with. Other than that, as a sidebar to the collection, because of the research that was required, I ended up with a pretty large collection of your magazine and of the Pro Magazine Hall of Fame edition. So, yes, McFarlane was my focus, but I also benefited from the things that I needed to create these McFarlanes. And those two magazines, I have quite a few.
Yeah. I noticed Ted Hendricks, obviously, you have 11 of those from the NFL, 5 from college. Bobby Lane, interestingly enough, what's up with, you know, you have him, you know, the one, the Doak and the boys.
Obviously, I have him in numerous Detroit Lion poses. I have him in numerous other poses as well. And and his college. He played for Texas, so I have him in a few of the Texas poses. But I mentioned to you that I watched a lot of football growing up, and Bobby Lane at that time, before Dan Marino and Bob Greasy came in, was my favorite quarterback. I just thought that he brought a lot to the game in terms of his feistiness and how he stood in the pocket. And so, obviously, I commissioned quite a few of them just to get it right. Sometimes, the artist would do a good job, but you're always looking for the perfect figurine. So I ended up with, I think, 15 of his
total, yeah. Sammy Baugh.
Yeah.
This is just a great list. Ted Hendricks, those listing. Ted Hendricks at 16, Bobby Lane at 15, Sammy Baugh, Slinging Sammy at 11, Dan Marino, obviously a Dolphin Hall of Famer at 10, Ollie Madsen, Crazy Legs Elroy, Bobby Waterfield at 9, Zonka 9, Paul Warfield, the amazing Paul Warfield at 8, Nick Bonacani at 8. You have 106 figurines of those ten gentlemen.
Right. Yeah. So they represented, about 8% of the collection. Joe should like Bob Waterfield. Isn't he a graduate of Oregon?
U of O. Yeah, he went to U of O. Yeah. Him and Dan Fouts. Oregon has a history of churning out some good quarterbacks and some not so good ones.
Yeah, I have a very very nice looking Bob Waterfield in his Oregon Ducks uniform.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Just impressive. I dig it. It's just pretty cool. And seriously, just going over this this catalog you put together, it's very cool. It's so organized. Veronica Nagurski, Don Hudson, I mean, most artistic. I mean, and you catalog this so well. The Jim Thorpe, Ernie Nevers, Ollie Madsen, Don Hudson one looks amazing. I love how the football is up on a stand and he's just,
that's why I was
grabbing it.
That was number 5 on the list.
Yeah. The Paul Hornung one, for the most realistic that you have, looks incredible. Charlie Choo Choo Justice, that's one of my favorite nicknames, Choo Choo.
Right.
I'm just scrolling through this again. It just looks cool. You've picked, it's so, swathed in NFL history. I mean, you've got names in your, Blood McNally, John Blood McNally. I mean, Mike Ditka, Guy Chamberlain, Turk Edwards. I mean, these are names that, unless you're a nerd collector like us, most people hadn't heard of them. You're immortalizing them, in your McFarland, and I dig it.
Well, again, I give your magazine a lot of credit because a lot of the stories that were written, whether it be Red Grange or whoever, would inspire me to say, I'd rather have a nicer looking McFarland for that particular individual. So, kudos to you guys and keep the good work coming.
Hopefully, with the Red Grange article you read that I wrote. What are you looking for? What's on your want list? I mean, you have 1,100 McFarlands, custom made, Hall of Famers, future Hall of Famers. Incredible. What else you got? What's the light whale?
Here's the issue, guys. I think I mentioned to you when we first talked a couple of weeks ago, my wife and I had just moved to a 1,400 square foot condo.
Wow.
All that collection is in storage right now. I'm contemplating, what to do. I've actually thought of donating it to the Hall of Fame. I have not talked to them yet, but I just don't want to be putting these back on eBay. I'm retired. I don't want to have the hassle of going through eBay and trying to sell off 1,400. But that being said, if I were to continue this collection, what I would do is I am missing, because I mentioned to you that I had completed it totally through 2016. So I'm missing about 16 players from the 17, 18, 19, and, of course, a huge class in 2020. So I would obviously collect those. And then finally, in a diorama, the diorama that I would love to have if those of you who may have seen the Dolphin-Raider game, that picture of Ryan Fitzpatrick's head being pulled in one direction and throwing a no pass would make a perfect McFarlane. So I would love to see – I would commission that tomorrow. I still may commission that and just have it as a piece in the den. But so to answer your question, I'm not sure what's going to happen to this collection, but it was definitely 20 years in the making and a lot of fun, and it really brought back a lot of memories from childhood. And my degree in university is in history, so it brought a lot of history from football that that I wanted to find some way to keep it going.
Wow. That's great. That's great. John, do you have any advice for beginning collector who may be thinking about entering, collecting statues, McFarlane, so on and so forth?
Yeah, I think it's very simple. Maybe this goes contrary to the collecting field, but I think you should collect what you're passionate about and not worry about the investment portion of it. If you're looking for a financial return, I'm not sure. If I was going to do that, I don't know if I would have created or collected 1,400 McFarlane. So I think be passionate and collect that. Two, I would be focused. So rather than, for instance, in my case, rather than collecting all the McFarlanes that were ever created, I focused in on the Hall of Fame, and that helped. And
yeah.
And finally, family has to come first. You know, pay for your wedding, pay for your children's tuition before you start spending $500,000 on a green jersey.
Hey, I resemble
those
that.
That's great
those
advice, to say the least. Wow.
Yeah. Again, John, 7 kids. You got family first in there somewhere.
Yeah.
How's the counterfeit market? We have problems in the mainstream football hobby with resealed football wax packs, fake autographs, fake jerseys, trimmed cards. I mean, how's that look in this sector of the hobby?
Yeah, it isn't an issue because remember, these artists, these are one of a kind, right? So you really, unless you're trying to. It wouldn't make sense. If you could buy a Tom Brady for $15 at Toys R Us, you know, why would somebody be putting it on eBay for $50? Like, you don't see that. You don't see that in the custom McFarlane collectible industry. You don't see that. That isn't an issue.
Okay. So is it pretty prevalent? Is it just something to be wary of? So, you know, if it's too cheap to be true, you know, if it's too good to be true price wise, it probably is, kind of thing. I mean, what's some advice you have
on
somebody who's...
You don't, I mean, again, I would encourage yourselves and the listeners to go on eBay and just type in custom McFarlane's, and you'll see the plethora of available. And it's not just football. There's customs in baseball and basketball, but mostly you'll see in the football arena. So it's difficult to, when you say have a counterfeit one, that isn't possible.
If you've created
one, it's a piece of art, right? So,
right.
But they'll be clearly marked, is it a custom McFarlane or is it an original McFarlane? And if it's an original McFarlane, other than for the collector that wants to keep them in their packages, I don't see that would ever be an issue of people selling McFarlanes that are fake.
Well, that's good for the market then, knowing that. I mean, compared to like what we see in cards, you know, as Joe brought up, you know, that's a good sign for that type of market for the McFarlanes. So. That's interesting to know also. John, we're almost out of time. Any final thoughts?
Well, I thank you all for allowing me to talk about my passion and keep that magazine going, because it brings a lot of history and honoring these players that without them, these current players wouldn't have the luxury that they have today.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate it. John, thanks for being
said
on
it many
tonight.
Times.
And,
said many
amazing collection, truly amazing. And to let our listeners know, John is going to be featured in the spring issue of Gridiron Grace magazine as our super collector. So we'll have some of those pictures of what he has described tonight in the magazine for everyone to see. And it's going to be incredible to see in print. That's all I can say. John, thanks for being on. We appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you both.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.
All right, Joe, we're going to wrap things up. We're down to a few minutes. We're going to go into our two-minute warning and wrap up. I'm going to hand off to you now. What'd you pick up on tonight's show?
Shoot, boy. Man, oh, man. How cool is this? These are just nods to the football greats, and some of these are so well done. It's pretty cool, but I agree with what John said. It is, you know, a slippery slope, but just kind of that rabbit hole of just, you know, coming up with scenes and, you know, seeing cool things that you want recreated. It's got to be tough. I mean, some of these are amazing.
Yeah, I was when I got the emails and looking at all the pieces of the book and so on and so forth, I was just floored by the sheer volume of what was there, the beauty of them. I mean, they're just so nice to display. I mean, they're very, very pleasing to look at. And you can ponder the scene, the player, and think back to the history of that player or the scene, so on and so forth. And I think that really makes them a very unique and educational collectible on top of it, you know. And to have 1,400 of them is just, you know, to me, incomprehensible in a way. But what a collection. I got to say, John's been a subscriber to GG for many, many years, one of our few Canadian subscribers. I also have to mention the Canadian Football League Alumni Association also subscribes to our magazine. I've been in touch with them several times, and they're very interested in what we do with players. A lot of them do have a history in the CFL also. And again, the CFL, is, I've always felt, was underrated because there are some great players, great games, great dynasties of that league, and sometimes it's overlooked in the history of the NFL. So they're still there. They're still functional. Hopefully to be on the field in 21 playing. But getting back to John's collection, just truly amazing. Truly amazing.
Oh. And it sounds like I misspoke. For some reason, I thought he had 1,100. It was 1,400. Under-guessing someone's the breadth of someone's collection. That's pretty cool. Just, again, just cool. You know, he rattled off his top 10. And what's funny is I have a short attention span. I didn't notice the header was top 10. And as I was scrolling through that, I'm like, Doak and the boys, the Dwight Clark, the catch. I was like, God, these are so good. And it was just kind of cool, you know, because those were some of my favorites. And it was cool to hear him say, these are my favorites. I'm like, man, all right. At least we're on the same page there.
Yeah. All right, we're almost out of time. Check out our website, gridirongreatsmagazine.com. If you're not a subscriber, what are you waiting for? Gridirongreatsmagazine.com. Joe, back to you. 20 seconds. Final thoughts.
Hope to talk to you before or after the Super Bowl, Captain, but if not, then I'm sure our text chat amongst our friends will be active and fun.
And we'll see if Mr. Brady adds another ring to his collection. Truly amazing. Truly amazing. And again, I just want to, in like 10 seconds or less, I truly am amazed in my lifetime viewing the collections I've viewed over the years. And John is right up there one of the top 10 collections I've ever seen. It just amazes me. And I'm so happy I've been able to share these with the football collecting community because they definitely need to be preserved and they definitely need to be shown to the public. All right, we're almost out of time. Thanks for listening. Joe, we'll be back next month for a few more episodes. GridironGreatsMagazine.com.